The Athletic.
Gakpo, Gakpo, Gakpo. En weer een goal van Cody Gakpo.
Qatar gently weeps. It's day 10 at the World Cup. The hosts bow out. England beat Wales. USA defeat Iran. From Van Gaal's Netherlands to Christian Pulisic's Nether Regions, we round up all the day's winners and losers. Plus, we look ahead to Wednesday's action, the pressure on Argentina, and the dangers of social media. It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Day 10 at the World Cup. Listen, thank you so much for joining us for another Totally At the aforementioned tournament. In today, Adrian Clarke and Matt Davis-Adams. Hello.
Howdy.
Hi.
All right. Also going to hear from Alexander Abnos at the Althumama Stadium at that very dramatic USA-Iran game very, very shortly. Martin Mazur will be along later to talk about big game for Argentina on Wednesday. And also Mikael Jongsma on Are the Netherlands Any Good? Because we're all kind of wondering. Are England any good, Matt Davis-Adams?
Oh, I think that they played well against a limited opponent for half of the game here. I think perhaps the thing that has been proven is that perhaps Gareth Southgate is quite good and is capable of changing games by making decisions and bringing on players and changing where positions.
That's a first for everything, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean this does genuinely feel like quite a significant night for Gareth Southgate. Right. Is that over-egging it a little bit? I mean, I thought the way that he swapped Rashford and Foden just to play on opposite sides for the second half seemed to make a massive difference in the game. But then we're talking about a Wales team who, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll come on to your breakdown of England 3, Wales 0 very, very shortly. But playing at the same time as England were sealing their qualification for the last 16 was USA 1, Iran 0. Mediocre USA going through to the knockout stages. Who'd have thought, Adrian?
Who'd have thought? Pretty good, I got to say. I take my hat off to the coach, actually, Greg Berhalter. I thought he's done a great job. He really has. And they do seem like a team that can handle the big occasion. I think that they performed above expectations against England. They were the better side. And with a lot of pressure here, this was a difficult game. A lot of people were fancying Iran. They bossed the game. It was only really towards the end where things got a little bit desperate that Iran put them under any kind of pressure. I think this young team have excelled themselves, and well done to them.
Excellent. All right. The other group in action today was Group A, which saw Netherlands beating Qatar 2-0. Qatar finish with the worst record of any host nation ever. Netherlands go through. And meanwhile, Ecuador and Senegal facing each other for the right to go to the last 16 with the Dutch. And it was Senegal who triumphed here, a 2-1 victory. We'll get onto that later on. But Senegal will be facing England as a result on Sunday, while the Netherlands will be next up for the USA. Did you have a moment of the day, Matt and Adrian, that you wanted to bring out?
It's a toss-up for me between those Senegal dancers with the letters painted on their bellies whose rhythm was just mesmeric, and Qatar being hopeless and losing every game, if that's not too churlish to say. Can I have two moments of the day? Let's go for the Senegal dancers. That's
all
that
right,
better. Yeah, two for me in the US-Iran game. The first one was a back heel nutmeg from Golizada. That was beautiful. It's a rare occurrence. And the second one, I'm afraid it's Christian Pulisic's goal, which was then followed by that painful looking injury in the in the midriff. It was quite funny.
All right, excellent. Group B then. We'll start off with England's triumph over Wales.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
So the stage is left to Marcus Rashford with the free kick. Oh, what a free kick! And that was special. Marcus Rashford does it for England.
All right, Group B had both Wales and England and Iran and USA playing at the same time. Matt, you were on England duties.
Yes, and Wales duties.
And Wales duties as well, but less so as the night wore on. You were telling us about Gareth Southgate, who not only brought in Marcus Rashford and Phil Foden, but swapped them around ruthlessly to further bamboozle the Welsh.
Yeah, well, he made four changes in total, and bringing in Kyle Walker was obviously something of a risk, which seems to have paid off. He got, what, nearly an hour's worth of football, and Henderson coming in as well. But first half was very similar to the USA game, I think, with England huffing and puffing. And I think that's what Wales had taken their lead on in their approach to the game, of almost, we can let these guys punch themselves out and turn on each other and the booze will rain down from the stands, and we can make hay from there. But whatever Southgate did or said at halftime clearly worked. England came out revitalised. I wonder also if perhaps the loss of Nico Williams for Wales played a part, because it was down that side that at least one of the goals came from in the second half. But Wales, as has been the theme of the tournament, let down by some of the players who have been so vital for them throughout the years. Now, Ben Davis at fault for one of the goals. Bale apparently injured, hauled off at half-time. Ramsey and Allen anonymous. And it all just felt, as it has done all tournament, that this was a step too far for them. And they go home, you know, having been to the World Cup for the first time in 64 years and left it having scored one goal, which was a penalty, and with 1 point. I think that there's real reason to look back with regret for them. But for England, they've won the group. It's almost been vintage England. They've had the performance that we all get hyped up by, the one that we're all really disappointed by, and then another one just to see you through to the knockout stages, albeit it's the first time in quite a while that they've topped the group at the World Cup. So all going a bit too well, possibly.
Since 2006, actually, says producer Charlie. All right, so Marcus Rashford opened the scoring with a wonderful free kick.
Yeah, he's got this in his locker, hasn't he? I remember seeing him score one at Stamford Bridge for Man United a few years ago. Similarly, I heard some unkind people maybe questioning Danny Ward, but I think it was just really well struck by Rashford. Again, it was a free kick that didn't really need to be given away, but it was Foden's running that had done that, kind of slaloming his way through the Wales defence and inviting the challenge, and yeah, just well and truly thumped by Rashford. And before they'd even cleared their heads, there's Rashford again to pounce on a mistake from Ben Davis. Harry Kane, the Silver Boot nominee, flashing one across the face of goal and turned in for 2-0 by Foden. Rashford gets another.
Mm.
Three and easy, as you could say. But yeah, Bellingham, exceptional, certainly in the first half again. Henderson certainly added something in terms of being Southgate's chief lieutenant on the field. People like Trent Alexander-Arnold got some football, which doesn't harm. And it's all looking pretty good for England at the moment. I'm probably not going to see the likes of Maddison and Gallagher if we didn't see them tonight. But an interesting challenge awaits in Senegal, and a new opponent for England, and certainly a step up in class from what they faced in Iran and in Wales in particular, and possibly even from the USA, I'd say.
We also saw an appearance from Chesney Hawkes. How was he?
Annoyingly, the BBC didn't broadcast that, which was a real shame, I thought.
I wonder which song he
was. I was going to say, I'm not sure what he played, but there was only one contender,
yeah,
I suppose you could say.
It was a moment of real quality, wasn't it, to open the game
Chesney,
up?
No.
No, not Chesney. Now, from Marcus Rashford, I think for all of England's improvements after the break and that slight tactical tweak, it was a moment of individual quality from a free kick that just opened the game up, because then Wales had to come out. And from there, I think England really tore at them and they pressed noticeably better in that second half. I just think this England team, because of all the quality they've got in forward areas, just need to be that little bit more proactive inside the opposition half. Go hunting the ball, win it in good areas, because on those transitions, Foden, Rashford, Kane, Saka, if he's playing Sterling, these are guys that all thrive off those situations rather than tepid side-to-side football. I just feel that we, as a team, need to create our own energy and create our own chances through a bit more drive. And we did see that in the second half. So and it was great to see Rashford on fire. I think we were saying this while we were watching the game, weren't we? From where he was last year, at the end of last season, he looked broken as a player. He didn't look like he was enjoying football, maybe life. You know, we don't know what was going on inside his head at the time, but he wasn't right. He was low. He just looked low. And to see him uplifted this season and to go and produce that performance tonight on the big stage, I think is really heartwarming. And it just goes to show the importance of the mental state of all of the players. And we have, I think as fans, we always should take a little step back sometimes and just think, you know, how are these players? Are they all right in themselves, rather than just going for lambasting a poor performance? Because there's so many other things outside that can affect people.
Yeah.
And I'm just delighted to see him back to his old self.
Yeah. Matt, do you want to revise your comments about Wales in the light of all of that?
I would say it's another credit for Southgate that he picked Rashford, isn't it? Because he hadn't played for England since the final of the Euros, I don't think, before this World Cup. But obviously...
I think it's a case of rotation, because he knew England were through. He knew that they weren't going to mess up and lose by four tonight. So it was a case of, I've got an opportunity here to give Saka and Sterling a breather, give Foden and Rashford a chance, and they took it, didn't they?
So, great night for the clamour, for sure.
Yeah, what does he do now? That is the big question, isn't it? For the game against Senegal, who do you go with?
I don't know. We'll have ample pods to discuss that, luckily. Wales go home, as we were saying during the game. You know, I mean, well done to them for getting to the World Cup, but it did feel like a bit of a wasted opportunity when you think that Ukraine could have been there instead.
Yeah, I mean, as a half Welshman, I'm probably not going to agree with that necessarily, but there will be a lot of ruefulness from Wales. I certainly think so. I think, as I say, I understand why they started with the tactics that they did in this game, but they didn't work. They started with the wrong team and the wrong tactics in the first game, didn't they? And had to change it at half time to get a point. And then they were terrible against Iran. So there's culpability all round there. I think there's culpability for the coaching and for the players.
I think for Rob Page has probably been guilty of just being too kind to a Gareth Bale, to Aaron Ramsey. Gareth Bale didn't look right, did he? The only thing he really did across the three games was win the penalty and slot it home. In this game, five passes, just one successful pass in the match. And I know he was withdrawn at half time,
right,
with a quote marks injury. But yeah, not the way he would want to bow out of World Cup final football. You know, he's had a great career, but he's not ended on a high, that is for sure.
Indeed not. All right. Next up for us, we'll look at the other game from Group B. USA 1, Iran 0.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from £10 up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Justin McKinney, Dest making a big run. It's meant for him. Dest is stuck in behind. Dest into the middle. Pulisic scores! Might have paid the price, but the US takes the lead.
USA through to the knockout stages for the first time since 2010. Joining us now, on the whistle from the Al Thumama Stadium, Alexander Adnos. Alex, first of all, how's the adrenaline?
Still pumping. Still coursing through my veins. That was one heck of a finish. So many things went wrong for the U.S. So many things went wrong for Iran. I really had no idea who was going to advance until the final whistle was blown. But it turns out it's the U.S., so how about that?
How about that? Yeah, it was a very slender lead to nurse through all the second half, and then those 9, 10, 11 minutes of time added on, particularly against an Iran side that against Wales struck so very late.
Yeah. I mean, that was in the back of my mind and in the back of my colleagues Paul Tonorio and Sam Staskel's mind the entire time. I was there for that Wales-Iran game, and the thing that I'll remember most is just how Iran never really kept pushing. They never really lost belief. I think the difference tonight was Iran just, their quality, for whatever reason, took a nosedive. They were in the same positions. They were trying the same patterns. They had the same basic attitude. But it was literally just like cleanliness on the ball that did them in. They had a lot of touches that got away from them, a lot of passes that weren't exactly in the right spot. And, you know, the U.S. didn't really offer much in the second half. But Iran wasn't able to do it themselves either.
Well, the other big difference, of course, was the goal by Christian Pulisic, Captain America.
Yeah.
He's such a big game player for the USMNT, but that's got to rank right up there in terms of the importance of his goals.
I mean, I think it's a pretty easy argument that that's the most important goal that Christian Pulisic has scored for the national team in his career. The previous high for that would probably be in the Nations League final from last year against Mexico. He scored a penalty in extra time to win that game 3-2 in extra time. That was kind of one of his signature moments. He scored a bunch of other really, really important ones in qualifiers that are obviously important because they're qualifiers. But the World Cup is different, as we all know, and scoring in one can change your reputation for the better. And he proved it again today.
It was a goal that took him out of the side, though, because he had to come off with an abdomen injury was the official version after he smacked into Berenvand. Timothy Ware with what was going to be an extraordinary goal if he hadn't been a fraction offside.
Yeah.
But it speaks to the fact that there is quality in this US MNT.
Oh, there absolutely is. And I think that they're capable of playing many, many times better than they did today. I don't know exactly what the term is, and I'm not like a tactical genius, so I can't break down right here and there what exactly they did wrong, but generally speaking, the energy was down. I think particularly their subs didn't really impact the game in a positive way. I thought Haji Wright coming in at striker, you know, you want somebody at that point to put pressure on Iran's back line. He's got fresh legs. He's supposedly got energy having sat on the bench the whole time, and he really offered nothing. Kellen Acosta did some of the same. I mean, you know, Iran, again, should have had more chances than they got, but their quality let them down, and the U.S. Escaped. It sounds like I'm being harsh on the U.S. in a game that they won, but I really think that they're capable of much better than they were showing today.
Okay, and they may need to be much better next Saturday when they face the Netherlands, Alex.
Yeah, that will be a different type of challenge for sure. I think... You know, the optimistic take is that this U.S. team, you know, they're young and they have shown an ability over the last several years to play up to the level of their competition. We certainly saw that against England, where they put in a pretty great performance, certainly much better than we saw today. So that would be the optimist take. They're through the hard part. They're into the knockout rounds. They feel like they kind of have a new lease on life here. And, you know, the Netherlands are a good team, but I'm sure that Greg Berhalter and everybody will be trying to find weaknesses to exploit. And, you know, who knows how that side of the bracket shakes out. But knockout rounds are different. Anything can happen.
Lovely stuff from Alexander Abnos there and whoever was on the PA at the Al Thumama Stadium. Oh, Alex saying he's not a tactical genius, but... Adrian, you clearly are. So what did you make of USA's victorious performance?
Well, they were tactically much better than Iran. No doubt about that in this game.
In what way? What did they do?
Well, I think that they took the fight to Iran. They were aggressive. They were assertive. Their midfield again, and we keep banging on about their midfield. But it is really good. It's impressive. I thought Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and in particular Yunus Musa, were really impressive. It was his 20th birthday today. So, terrific performance from him. And they just rocked Iran onto the back foot. At half time, 9-0 up in terms of shots on goal.
Really?
Which I think in a game that where they knew they had to go out and win it was pretty impressive.
But the second half looked very, very different.
Yeah, it was different. I think Iran were obviously going to come back into it. They upped the tempo. They got busier. They took off the striker. And I think this is why tactically Berhalter got his team right, the initial team right. Maybe some of his subs worsened the team a little bit too much. But Carlos Queiroz went with Azmoun, who did so well against Wales but isn't fully fit. And what happened there is that it shifted Taremi to the left-hand side of the attack, Aubameyang style. He's in that left-sided forward role. For me, Taremi is best down the middle. He's their best finisher. And he didn't get a sniff of goal, obviously, in that first half. But more tellingly, he was the one culpable, in my opinion, for the goal that won the game. Weston McKennie sees the run of Serginho Dest. It was brilliant in the first half, the buccaneering right back. And he runs off of Taremi, who basically just doesn't want to track back. He's a striker. It's not what he's trained to do. He switches off. Dest nods the ball across the face of goal and Pulisic bundles it home. So, you know, when you break it down, Carlos Queiroz and his team selection and where he put his players, I think ultimately cost Iran the game.
There you go. USA goes through. They'll be facing the Netherlands on Saturday. But beyond even the qualification, a huge important result, I guess, in prospect of the next World Cup, because we'll see about Mexico. As it stands, it's extremely likely that USA will be the only one of the next of the trio of the hosts of the next World Cup who will be into the knockout stages of this tournament. Crikey. All right. Well, next up, let's get on to Group A and the Netherlands and Senegal.
Incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area, and... sorry, I just got to take that.
Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline. 0800 0433 433. News, insights, analysis, The Athletic. Know the game, love the game.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Tuesday afternoon, Group A in action. Senegal ain't got no money, but they've got a place in the last 16, Matt Davis-Adams.
Yeah, and I think they were worthy of it, certainly from this game. Ecuador been a little bit cowed, maybe, and Senegal just kind of putting it all out.
You mentioned the painted tummies, but yes, the drums as well. Mm. The drums.
Mm. Yeah, and I think in Aliou Cisse they've got a really promising coach. I'm really interested to see what his next move is, you know, because he's already won AFCON, hasn't he? He's probably not going to win the World Cup with Senegal, but you'd say he's kind of completed the job. So interested to see what he does next. I think that losing Idrissa Gueye for the England game might prove to be fairly significant for Senegal.
He got a yellow card for clattering platter, basically. Senegal took the lead through a penalty won and converted by Ismail Assar, which moved them in second place in the group behind Netherlands. But then Caicedo, from the corner, I think it was, equalise. This was 66 minutes in, and Ecuador were back into second place, and Senegal seemed to take that personally.
Yeah, because then Koulibaly, who I thought actually probably was at fault, Adrian thinks that it was the whole Senegal defence for the goal they conceded, but it looked to me as though it was Koulibaly who'd lost his man. But there he is hooking in what I'm going to call a trademark volley. If you look at the goal that he scored for Chelsea against Spurs earlier this season, this was very, very similar to it. His first international goal, which I was surprised to learn, Kalidou Koulibaly.
A Chelsea player who's not been doing too well for his club, but doing well internationally.
All of a sudden, it's become the theme, hasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
He sorted his feet out so well for that goal because it all happened so quickly, but he shuffled his feet and he got himself into a position where he could just get a decent bit of contact onto the ball. I thought it was a finish that he should feel incredibly proud of. I mean, it was just an example, wasn't it, of a big player in a big match stepping up with a big moment. And yeah, Koulibaly was the hero for Senegal. They were good. I thought they, again, with the pressure on, they raised their game. And yeah, Ali Oussouse, I think, is a decent tactician. It certainly worked out Ecuador pretty early on in the game. Ecuador were a mess, by the way. I made them favourites going into the game based on what I'd seen previously. But the back four were panicking from minute one.
Right.
I was looking at the rear guard. Now, they should be either in a line or the centre-back should be just a yard behind the full-backs. You're on the bevel. That's how you should be. And they were just like a jaggedy. One player was in front of the other one was behind. It was a mess. And if you look at that first goal where Senegal win the penalty from the quick free kick, that back four is all over the gaff. And that was the theme, really, as far as I could see it. And Senegal were good enough to take advantage. And there's got some good players, haven't they, Senegal?
Well, yeah. Gay is not going to be available for the game on Sunday against England. What else can we expect from the Lions of Taranga, the reigning African Cup of Nations champions, of course?
Well, I think that is really important because they're winners. They've climbed the mountain, haven't they, already? I know it's the African Cup of Nations where they're among the favourites, but they've still won a major trophy. And what I saw here was a team that's got a lot of spirit, character and organisation and grit, really. Even though they were better than Ecuador, there were still moments in the game where they needed to sort of pull together as a group, and they did it. And I think they'd be quite tricky opponents for England. Yeah, they are tactically, I would suggest, the most astute African side at the tournament.
How do they play then, Adrian? I mean, in this game, they were very much seemed to be coming at you.
They were down the wings. They were good down the wings, weren't they, Matt? I mean, Ismaïla Sarr down the left. We know all about him. Illiman and Jai down the right for three quarters of the match. Sheffield United player that we know very well. This is a kid that's been brilliant this season. Was in non-league 2 or 3 years ago. He's come into the EFL and he's shone for Sheffield United as a striker, as a number 10. I've seen him play in central midfield for passages of games. He's looked great in all of them. And in this game, he was on the right wing and he looked at home, I thought. So they got good wingers. I think they're lacking a striker with no Sadio Mane. I think that's an issue. But in general, they are strong at the back and down the wings. And I think it will be an awkward game. It's one England will be favourites for, but they have dangerous players.
All five of their goals so far have come from different players. Matt, anything you'd like to add about Senegal?
I wasn't going to say that. Yeah, I did tip up Illiman and Jai on the show that I was on last week to be one of the one of the potential game changers for Senegal. I do think that's going to be interesting, whether it's a half fit Kyle Walker or Kieran Trippier and Luke Shaw against Saren and Jai. That's one to watch. I mean, was that the most beautifully dispatched penalty of the tournament so far? I do feel like we've seen some good ones, but when you get it right in the corner of the net like that, it's so aesthetic.
Nonchalant, wasn't it? It couldn't have been more in the corner. And it was so cash the way he delivered it, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know how they do that in those real pressure moments, just to stay as calm as that. Yeah, tip my hat to him.
Incredible. Ecuador broken at the end, then Senegal goes through. Next up, let's hear about Netherlands and a slightly less pressured encounter with Qatar.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Tuesday afternoon also saw Louis van Gaal's Netherlands taking on Qatar. Not many fans turned up for this, given that it was the host nation's final game in the tournament. They have become, as I mentioned before, the host nation with the worst record. The first host nation to lose all of their group matches at the World Cup. The first host nation to concede more than five goals in a group stage. They racked up seven conceded in the end.
And how long have they been together? They've been together for maybe, about 3 or 4 months.
Maybe too long.
Definitely too long. Yeah. No,
you can definitely spend too long with people. Yeah. So, there you go. That's Qatar. As for the Netherlands, we are still wondering, given the group they're in, are they any good? So let's get the opinion now of our favourite Dutch expert, Michael Jongsma. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Jimbo. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How, though, are the Netherlands doing? This group's been a bit of a stroll, and I think a lot of people still have questions, but I guess the one thing that we do know for sure is that you have a star in your ranks.
I suppose you're talking about Cody Gakpo, although I think Van Gaal has been the star in the media so far.
Okay. So it was Cody Gakpo I was thinking of. Three shots, three goals, one with his left, one with his right, one with his head. Of the five goals scored in Qatar by Netherlands, he scored three of them.
Yeah, and he is a very good player. He's been really dominant in the Eredivisie this season. He's quite an unusual type because he is quite tall, but he plays as a winger, whereas most forwards that are as tall as he is tend to become more of the striker type. But he's been very efficient so far, and he is such a clean finisher, technically very gifted. And one of the few bright individual performances of this Dutch team so far, I would say.
Mm. People making all sorts of comparisons for him, illustrious ones too. He's the fourth Dutch player ever to score in three consecutive World Cup matches, along with Bergkamp, Schneider and Neeskens. Michael Cox, comparing his role with this Netherlands side to that of Arjen Robben. How much can we read into, though, both for him and indeed for the Netherlands, what's been a bit of a stroll, this group?
Yeah, but I think in the Netherlands, there has been quite a bit more pessimism because this doesn't feel like a strong group. I think everyone thought the Dutch were lucky to get this group. Then Sadio Mane, probably the most accomplished forward player in the group, was out of the World Cup as well. So that was kind of a windfall for the Dutch. And all in all, they have not been impressive at all. This was the first match where they felt kind of dominant. And in that sense, it has a few comparisons with the last Euros of the Netherlands, where they had quite an easy group, stroll through the group, and then faced a stronger opposition. So I think most people in the Netherlands are actually quite anxious to see what's going on with this Dutch team, because it hasn't been a fluent footballing machine as much as people will be hoping for. And Cody Gakpo obviously is one of the few bright spots, but I think when you compare the Arjen Robben performance, especially during the World Cup in 2014, to what Cody Gakpo has done so far, I think there's quite a huge gap in quality and talent between the two.
Mm. All right, so far then, but they wouldn't be the first Dutch side or the first side from any nation to begin a little bit slowly and pick up speed and momentum as the tournament progresses. If we're not convinced that they're so far adding up to the sum of their parts, how much potential is there in this Netherlands side?
It is quite difficult. Louis van Gaal was saying this summer that he thought this was a better squad than his team that he took to the semi-finals of the World Cup in 2014. But I think when you look back at that side, there were quite a few up-and-coming talents that turned out to be really good. You had some absolute superstars in Arjen Robben and Van Persie, and this side has some superstars as well. But instead of being in good shape, looking sharp, those superstars are very much defenders and not looking all their best. The only one that really stands out at the moment probably is Frenkie de Jong, who's been quite good. But Virgil van Dijk hasn't really been his usual self. Memphis Depay has been injured and got his first start of the tournament today. It looked quite good. So it's a very unsure side at the moment. And I think that there is quite a bit of upside in this team, because they should be able to look a bit more comfortable on the ball. They should be able to just show a bit more spark, a bit more creativity. And I think the inclusion of Memphis Depay today showed that that this squad has some players that can make that difference as well. But they do need to show a bit more than they have done so far, because when you look at the more impressive sides during this World Cup, I would say that the Dutch are definitely not one of them.
Okay, what are you most hoping to see then from the Netherlands going into the last 16?
Memphis is integral in anything that they will accomplish as well. He's not been that impressive during his stint at Barcelona, but ever since he basically got into the Netherlands side eight years ago, he has been the one key player in attack. And I mean, Cody Gakpo now takes the headlines, but throughout the years, it's always been Memphis Depay plus one Robin to Memphis's Batman, so to speak. And now it's Gakpo, but Memphis is very much the key to anything that they will do. So I think people in the Netherlands will very much focus on what he can bring just in the business end of the tournament.
Mikkel Jongsma. Adrian, you got any thoughts on the Netherlands? That Gakpo goal, what did you think of that?
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, I loved it because it was a cheeky little back flick. Nice little 1-2, wasn't it, with Klaassen? And then the touch is a little bit heavy and he's running. He's basically trying to get to the ball before the defender, which stops him going for what I think would have been his first choice of shot, which was the curler. So in the end, he just has to spank it with his instep.
Right.
And boy, does he spank it. That was a really, really good strike into the bottom corner. And it was the finish of a really confident player. I do like the look of him. He sort of flits in and out, but down the middle, because whenever I've seen him before, he's been a wide forward, sort of on the edge of games. I think in that position that we saw him today, a little bit more central, he looked very, very dangerous. As for the Dutch, I don't know either, is the truth. Two shots in the last game. Pretty pathetic, really. And they only had 13 against Qatar. And we know how bad Qatar are. Four of them on target, two of them went in. So it's not as if they peppered the goal, is it, in this game?
This is quite a theme, though, isn't it? What, Iran had one shot on target tonight as well in a game that they needed to win? It does feel like it's been something of a theme in the tournament. Also feels a little bit trolly to bring on Wout Weghorst and Vincent Janssen. but I respect that.
Poor Felix Sanchez looking pretty miserable on the sideline for Qatar. Although I feel like it can't be long before Ajax have him as manager. No, he's very much their type. All right, well, that's Tuesday then. We've got another set of do or die matches coming up on Wednesday with Group C and D, so let's have a chat about that next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Group C and D take their final group stage matches on Wednesday. France already through from Group D. Everybody else could still make it through to the knockout stages. At 3 o'clock, two games, Tunisia taking on France. Even a win may not be enough for Tunisia, who are bottom of Group D with just 1 point. France already through, having won their last six World Cup games. Crikey. Australia-Denmark is the other match at three, battling to go through alongside France. Australia on 3 points. Denmark level with Tunisia on one. So the point probably enough. No, the point is definitely enough for Australia, Matt.
Yeah, I feel like this is tailor-made for Australia as well. I think they're well capable of sitting behind the ball, frustrating Denmark. And I think that Denmark are fine till it gets to the penalty area. And then all of a sudden, you're relying on either Andreas Cornelius, who couldn't quite cut it at Cardiff and his last goals came against the Danish third division side, or Martin Brathwaite, who's not quite a one-in-four man in international football. I think this has got the hallmarks of an Australia pack.
As long as the Australian players aren't too overtired, their manager, Graham Arnold, warning them about the dangers of social media. They'll get on that until 4 or 5 a.m., watch all the great comments and enjoy all that And it affects the sleep patterns. You're up until 5 a.m. looking at good comments. The same people backing you are the ones killing you the day after. So just get rid of it. Don't look at it.
Welsh, is he, Graham Arnold?
That's harsh, Matt.
I mean, he's probably right, isn't he? To be
he
fair,
is right.
But you would think that his players would not be doing that the night before.
I bet they are, though. I would be. Especially after I've just had a 1-0 win against Tunisia.
Yeah, just after that, fine, but not tonight.
Not tonight.
Or the night before.
If you're listening, Australian players, get some rest.
Listen, that's fine, but yeah.
I think we might help with the sleep and all that. Anyway,
they're not going to win this game, by the way.
What, Australia?
Denmark will win the game. Come on.
With your incredible powers of prediction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just think they're a level above Australia. I thought, actually, in the game against France...
They're two points beneath them.
I know, but I saw signs. They scored one. They could have had two or three in that second half against France. I felt they were growing into the tournament. So, yeah, I think Australia have had their moment. They got a great win against Tunisia that no one will remember apart from the Aussies. But... Denmark should win this.
All right, producer Charlie, clip that up. Group C take the field at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, UK time, of course. The matches here, Saudi Arabia and Mexico and Poland, Argentina. The group currently reads Poland top on 4 points, Argentina and Saudi Arabia on 3, and Mexico on just 1. Yet to score a goal, Matt, as they prepare to face the Mexicans at Saudi Arabia that's going to be quite a game.
Do you think so? I'm finding it a bit hard to get hyped for this one.
Because really?
I just feel like if either of these two go through, they go out in the next round anyway.
Right.
Is that unkind? And also, I mean, I have watched Mexico play, which I didn't particularly enjoy. It's Poland-Argentina in this group for me, okay. I'm afraid. I mean, it's Saudi, you know, Saudi Arabia obviously did very well against Argentina and then looked a little flat. We're talking about lack of shots. I don't think this is one where either goalkeeper is going to be.
Well, Saudi Arabia have been quite positive. Yeah. I think they've gone for it. They outshot Poland by quite a few. I am looking forward to it, especially the atmosphere. I think it'd be a cracking atmosphere. The Saudi fans are travelling. Well, it's not too far for them, but there's just so many of them, and you can probably say the same for Mexico. So no, I think this is a high stakes game, and there's a bit of history here at stake for Saudi Arabia. Well, Renard, what an opportunity.
Yeah,
we've seen one or two teams bottle it as such when the door was half ajar for them, thinking about Ecuador, thinking about Iran. So I'd quite like Saudi Arabia to get themselves over the line here.
Okay. So the other game is Poland-Argentina. Poland leading the group, yet concede a goal at this tournament so far, but facing a fired up Messi and co, who are still, Argentina, a long way from sure of their knockout place. They need a better result in this game against Poland than Saudi Arabia get in their match against Mexico. Yet more pressure for the Albiceleste after what's been a pretty tense campaign so far. Joining us on the line now from Buenos Aires is Argentine journalist Martin Mazur.
Martin, thank you so much for joining us. You're about to fly out to Qatar tomorrow, which is interesting because Argentina could be out by the time you get there.
I would say it's even more interesting because Argentina could be out and I still won't know until a couple of hours because I will be departing when first half is being played. So until you get connection... it usually takes 1 hour, 1.5 hours. So wow. I will have to wait. It will be a real World Cup thriller for me tomorrow. Oh.
Good Lord. Well, I mean, already against Mexico in the second game, you could have been out. What was the reaction when Messi finally broke through?
Oh, the reaction, I mean, everyone who's watched the game probably noticed the kind of... intensity and deep emotions that were there. To be honest, I haven't seen anything remotely similar to this. Only one game I remember. It was Brazil and Chile in 2014 in the World Cup in Brazil, and when they went to penalties, but they could have been out in the last minute with that shot that hit the post. And I saw Thiago Silva, I remember, crying before the penalties. Julio Cesar, the goalkeeper, was crying as well. So that was the pressure. And Argentina, even if they're playing in Qatar, it's like Argentina are playing here in our country, and the pressure is huge. And I think they managed to convince all of us that after winning the Copa America and finishing the 28 year spell without winning titles, at least official titles, the pressure was off. But we immediately noticed that it wasn't the case. I mean, considering that the World Cup is just starting, I'm a little bit worried about this kind of heavy pressure and how they manage their emotions.
This final group stage game, then, you need to get a better result than Saudi Arabia do against Mexico in your clash with Poland. But then again, it's not just about getting out of the group. It's also ideally about finishing in first place, because otherwise, Martin, you're going to be playing France in the last 16. France, who I'm sure you remember from your game against them in the last 16 of the last World Cup.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you think about that game, also that game was incredible, because Argentina were winning and only 25 minutes to go, and then they couldn't resist. Mbappé, especially Mbappé, who plays on the left, Argentina are having a lot of problems on the for the right back. Let's go. I would say I'm looking like a player now, but let's go game by game. Argentina is more similar, at least this Argentina from Scaloni, it's more similar to the 20 final minutes against Mexico, in which you can see all the intensity, the pressing, the never surrender, aggression, and every ball is the last ball. So it's at least in that period we could see that they had woken up in a way. I think it's important for Argentina, the idea that tomorrow they will enter knowing that if they win, they will be top of the group, probably, because Saudi Arabia would need to win by a wider margin against Mexico. So it's like a 3-0 for Saudi Arabia, 1-0 for Argentina, and that would I think that would be enough for them to qualify first, but it's very unlikely. So I would say, in terms of at least peaceful atmosphere, the idea that tomorrow they will enter the pitch knowing that if they win, they will be top of the group. It's like nothing has happened here. It's ideal compared to where they were after 70 minutes of play against Mexico.
Martin Mazur there.
Wow.
I mean, it's Argentina, but it's also Poland are tough to break down, aren't they? Wojciech Szczesny in terrific form.
Yeah, so you wonder if you might see a bit of Paulo Dybala. I don't know how fit he is in this to play in this game, but Di Maria's not really done much, has he? So I wonder if there's maybe an opportunity to bring him in. And at the other end, I'm interested to see, there are a lot of questions asked about the centre of Argentina's defence, weren't they? And obviously we saw that against Saudi Arabia, and then they didn't really have an attack to play against Mexico. Well, they're going to be coming up against Robert Lewandowski, who's just scored a goal here. So I think that's going to be a really interesting angle to this match. And but then again, you know, Poland, we're talking about shots on target. They had 3 against South Korea and 36% possession.
But they a draw is enough for them.
Is that good? Is that bad? You ever gone into a game, Clarkie, where you need a draw and then you
probably
what
have,
does that do to your mindset?
I don't think you can't really think that way, especially if you sit back and let Argentina with Messi and co come at you for 90 minutes. That's an incredibly dangerous game to play, isn't it? But I would be nervous if I'm an Argentina fan, because look at the goals they've scored. One's a penalty, and the other two are worldies, aren't they? For what,
is that a bad thing?
Well, they're not creating clear-cut chances, are they? They're not.
Right.
I think it's always better or more promising if you're creating a stack of opportunities that your striker's missing, because you think, well, sooner or later it's going to come. But we haven't really seen that from Argentina.
Although Martin's point was that in the last 20 minutes against Mexico, once Messi scoring, then Enzo Fernandez were incredible.
Yeah, it was
more like...
It was about momentum. And I always feel that a lot of people were suggesting here that Argentina was over-celebrating. And we hate the celebration police, don't we? I'm all for it. Well, I do anyway.
Arsenal's Adrian Clarke there, yeah.
Yeah, well, I hate criticism of celebrating, because football's fun. If you score goals, enjoy it. But that emotion, I think if there is a nation out there that feeds off emotion more than Argentina, I'm not sure I've seen them.
Really?
I think they love that. And I think they almost deliberately create that energy through this, through the joy of winning that game and scoring goals. So I expect them to carry on their momentum, but there are what they don't look like winners. And I tip them ahead of the competition to win it. And they don't look like potential champions at the moment, but maybe they'll grow into it.
Well, we shall see. That game is coming up 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening, UK time. And it'll be followed by us sitting right here in the studio and doing another Totally at the World Cup. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that, listener. For today, that's a big full stop. Many thanks, Adrian. And Matt, producer Charlie, Martin Mazur, Mikhail Jongsma, and Alexander Abnos. And you, listener, always you. We'll be back in 24 hours' time. Do join us then. For now, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app, discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube, and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.